Canyon country. Canyon country that's north of L.A. somewhere. And he lives on Hummingbird Circle. Not macho. I've had the privilege of knowing and loving this guy for 19 years, and I want to introduce our speaker tonight, Frank Jones.
Yeah. You didn't have to say much.
That's not much of
it. Damn it. I'm Frank Jones. I'm an alcoholic. And it's good to be here. It's good to be sober. And if Alcoholics Anonymous didn't work, I wouldn't be here tonight. And I want to thank Jim for calling and asking me to speak. And Jim for picking me up at the airport. I've had a great day today. And I got here and they've immediately started abusing me. You see this bottle of water? Joanne put this up here for me. And the bottle of water she's got holds half gallon. What's up with that? That's all right. But it is. It's good to be here. And I've had a great day today. This morning I played softball with about 80 other drunks and had some grilled hot dogs and salad and got cleaned up, took an airplane up here and had a good dinner with some old friends tonight. And I've had a good day. And I got to tell you that I don't go to Alcoholics Anonymous meetings because I'm suicidal or crazy or depressed or anxiety-ridden. I used to come to meetings for that reason. I don't do that now. I find that when I come to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous and I get to talk to the people before the meeting and I get to hear Chapter 5 being read and watch the folks take their birthdays and listen to the speaker and the traditions, talk to people after the meeting, by the time I leave, I always feel better. I always feel better when I leave a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's why I go to meetings today. I don't call my sponsor because I got a lot of problems going in my life or anything else today. I call my sponsor. I pick that phone up and I dial his phone number Monday through Friday and I hear that man's voice on the other end of the telephone and I feel better. I can't explain that to you. I don't know why just hearing his voice makes me feel better, but I call him Monday through Friday, and I feel better after I hear his voice. That's why I call my sponsor Monday through Friday. We got 12 steps in Alcoholics Anonymous. They were read tonight in Chapter 5. Those 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous are an inconvenience to work. They make you look bad. They embarrass yourself. You got to apologize to everybody, especially if you're like me. And I hate working those. But something funny happens when outside the meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous on the freeways, grocery stores, shopping malls, at work, at home, around my family, when I work those 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous to the best of my ability, I feel better. I can't explain that to you. It just works that way. So that's why I go to meetings. That's why I call my sponsor, and that's why I work the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. All those things make me feel better. I have no reason for being an alcoholic. I mean, look at me. I don't look like an alcoholic. Now, look at the people sitting next to you. They look like alcoholics, okay? It's plain why they're here. It's just obvious. So that's. And I come from good parents. I'm not from a dysfunctional family. My parents didn't beat me, handcuff me to the bed, put me in a closet, didn't abuse me or anything else. I had loving parents. They were married to each other for 50 years. Dad worked the same job for 40. I was born in Danville, Illinois, and I had a great childhood growing up. It was just great. So that's not why I'm an alcoholic. I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, worked these 12 steps, did that inventory, read it to my sponsor, talked about my defects of character and shortcomings, and I found out some other things about me growing up. You see, I am not one of those that analyzed my childhood and then I got into AA and went to psychoanalysis and had them talk about it. And I'm not searching for an inner child that I can cuddle and get a puppy for and a teddy bear. Because if I ever find my inner child, I will choke that son of a bitch unconscious. I have the kind of inner child, and I got to tell you, when you hear my story, you'll know my inner child wants to come out and break your toys and take your girl, okay? That's my inner child. I try to keep him locked up. I've been trying to be an adult over 56 years, and it's been very difficult. But I found out in Alcoholics Anonymous that growing up back in Danville, Illinois, I didn't analyze this or think about it, but growing up, I was a thief. I was a thief to fit in with the guys I hung with. I was a thief because it's easier to steal something than it is to stand in line and pay for it. Some of you still know that today. That's none of my business. But when you leave a store with the item and your money, you're a double winner, and I like that. Everybody in some meetings wants to talk about double winners. If you're a successful thief, you're a double winner, and I like that concept. And I'd steal today if I didn't have to go make amends. And I found out growing up that I lied. I just lied to lie, and it's easier to lie than it is to tell the truth. When you tell the truth is just there and you can't change it. When you lie, you can be anything you want to be. I've been everything from a truck driver to a gynecologist, for Christ's sake. That's just the way it is. I'm neither. Well, okay. And I cheated all the time because it's easier to cheat than it is to work hard and earn something. I found those things out growing up when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. And the other thing I found out is all my life I've wanted to be a macho guy. I know you guys here in San Jose don't worry about it, but I've always wanted to be macho. And check me out. I look like Mr. Peepers, for Christ's sakes. And I hated that. And the other thing, I was afraid of the dark. And I know no other guy in here was afraid of the dark. I was afraid of the dark in high school. I was ashamed of that. It made me feel like a wimp and a wussy. And I hated those feelings. And I just felt inadequate. And to compensate for that in high school, I played sports. I played football, basketball. I run track. I had offers to go to college, and they were willing to pay my way. That's not why I'm an alcoholic. And to compensate for feeling like a wimp and a wussy, after ball practice at school, I'd go down on Main Street in Danville, and I'd hang out with the macho guys in Danville. And these guys, when I was growing up, had long sideburns and ducktail haircuts, and they wore black leather jackets with zippers on them and bicycle chains. And these guys were macho dudes. And that's an adrenaline rush for a wimp like me. These guys carried zip guns, switchblade knives, and bicycle chains. And they were bad dudes. They'd have rumbles. A rumble's 40 or 50 guys beating hell out of each other in a vacant field. And I'd watch all you macho guys bang somebody out with a chain or cut them with your switchblade knife, and it never bothered you. You'd go on to the next guy and do it to them. And I'd hit somebody upside the head with a brick or a club, and I'd feel sorry for them. And I'd go home and worry about if they were hurt. And that makes you feel like a wimp and a wussy, because macho guys don't worry about stuff like that. That's how I was before I ever took a drink of alcohol. I didn't give a lot of thought to that. That's just the way it was. My first drink of alcohol, I was at a party in Danville, and it was a hot summer night, and all the guys from the ball teams were there, and my girlfriend brought me over a big iced tea glass full of slow gin and 7-Up. I didn't know what slow gin was, and that glass was red, and it had ice in it, and I took a little sip of it, and it tasted like strawberry Kool-Aid, and that was my drink of choice back then, I chug-lugged that glass of slow gin and 7-Up down. A lot of men speakers, when they speak, you hear them stand up here and tell you that first drink goes down into their stomach and it goes to the tips of their fingers and their tips of their hair, and all of them get 6 feet four, 240 pounds, and their pimples fall off. And that didn't happen to me. I just drank that glass of slow gin and 7-Up down. I gave her the glass, said, "Get me another one," and she did. She brought me another glass of slow gin and 7-Up, and I chug-lugged that down. Now, I didn't find an old wrinkled trench coat, put a bottle of wine in a paper bag, and head to Skid Row. I hadn't talked to my school counselors about being an alcoholic. I didn't plan on being an alcoholic. I was drinking that night for not the taste, not the effect, not what alcohol was doing to me or for me or anything else. I was drinking for one reason that night. I was drinking because all my buddies were drinking. That's all. I was drinking because my friends were drinking. And they were having a good time at that party. They were dancing and laughing and hugging and munching with their girlfriends in the back, and I couldn't do those things. I'm hung up on the front wall trying to be macho and be cool. I don't want to ask anybody to dance. I don't want them to say no to me. I don't want to stand there and talk to anybody. I don't want them to think I'm stupid. And so I thought, if I drank, I can do what those guys are doing. And I drank a gallon of slow gin in about 20 minutes. It was no big deal. I didn't get knee walking, commode hugging, puking on your dress shoes drunk. Now, 20 minutes after that last glass of slow gin and 7-Up, I found out where slow gin got its name. I got drunk as hell. I went into a blackout. I got taken home that night. I passed out, and the next morning I come to, and I'm puking red stuff up all over the bedroom. I'm puking up all the chips and dip and crap I'd eat that night. I am sicker than a dog. I got a terrible hangover. My head's throbbing. My stomach's upset, and something else is funny. I cannot remember how I got home that night. Now, you see, back then, I didn't know what a blackout was. I didn't know until I come to Alcoholics Anonymous and the old timers told me what a blackout was. Normal drinkers don't have blackouts. I didn't know that. I thought everybody drank and got the same effect that I got from it. And I come into Alcoholics Anonymous and found out that I was a blackout drinker from the first time I drank and got drunk. And looking back over my drinking, I know that's true because I used to go to movies with my girl or parties with my wife or girlfriend, and the next morning I'd come to and she'd start telling me about what we did that night, and I had no recollection of it. And then I'd be at a bar drinking and stuff, and I'd be going out to get my car to go to another bar, and I'd look around and my car's gone. And I'd go back in the bar and I'd call the police and report it stolen. Everybody'd split from the bar, the police would get there, and we'd walk out front and there's my car parked right where I left it. I tell the police, well, I guess I brought my car back. Not a problem. And then at the end of my drinking, I'd wake up in this dark place. I don't know where I'm at or how I got there. And I'd roll over in this bed, and there's something in bed with me, and I don't know where in the hell I got this at. And the hair is all matted down on it. It should have been tagged by the Humane Society. This is a beast if I've ever seen one. And you got to sneak out of that damn room. You don't want to wake that up. It will attack you. You know that. And those are blackouts, and those are indications that I had a problem drinking. And when I had hangover and stuff, I missed 3 days of school, and I went back to school, and the guys told me what happened that night at the party. They told me I was dancing and laughing and funny, and some guy said something. I popped him in the mouth, and we broke the screen door and had to collect up money to pay for it. And when those guys told me all that stuff, what I felt when they told me that is I felt a part of those guys. I felt like I had had a good time that night. I felt like I was with those dudes and I was part of the gang, and that made me feel good. And I didn't, after that there, I didn't get the shakes in study hall when I didn't drink. I didn't drink whiskey all the time. I drank when I could get it. And when I got it, I drank. And when I drank, I got in trouble. When I drank, I got in fights because I'm afraid. My whole life's been ruled by fear. And if you get too close to me, you'll find out I'm afraid. And so I became a fighter. And then you dare me to do something, and I'd go do it. And, it's stupid things they dare you to do. And, I'd get drunk and have blackouts and steal and get in fights. And that's how it was through high school. And then about 2 weeks before I was supposed to graduate high school and go to college, I got a committee in my head. And I don't know about you, but my committee raps to me all the time. And my committee meets, and they say, "Hey, Frank, what if you don't make that basketball team? You're going to look bad." Well, that scares me. I don't want to look bad in college with all those adults in school. And then my head says, "What if you don't get grades good enough to stay on that team?" Well, those things scared me. And, I hate fear. And so I made a keen alcoholic decision. I quit high school. It made sense to me. You can't go to college if you don't complete high school. So I quit school. And then I made another keen alcoholic decision. I joined the Marine Corps. If you're a wimp and a wussy and afraid of the dark, going into the Marine Corps is a bad deal. I probably should have went in the Air Force. I didn't know that back then. Or the Navy. It didn't make any difference. And But I didn't know that back then. And I enlisted in the Marine Corps, and I found myself on a train going up to Chicago to get sworn in. And I'm homesick, and I'm afraid, and I'm going to the big city, and I'm sitting next to a guy in this black leather jacket, and he's got a ducktail haircut, and I want to hang out with him in Chicago. I'll feel safe. And he's drinking out of this little brown bottle, and he turns to me and he said, "Hey, do you want a drink of this?" Now, if you want to hang with somebody, you got to be cool. And I said, "Yeah, give me some of that." And I took that bottle and I turned it up, and I chug-a-lugged 4 or 5 big mouthfuls of it, and it was whiskey. And I don't know how you drank whiskey when you were 17 when you chug-a-lugged it, but I'll tell you what I did is I sprayed that crap all over the seats in front of me. And I had tears coming out my eyes. I had snot and whiskey running out of my nose. I couldn't breathe. And I wiped off my face and I handed it to this guy the bottle back. And I said, "That stuff was pretty good." And, he just looked at me funny. And that's how I drank. I drank to fit in. I drank to be a part of. That's just the way it was. And I got sworn in and I ended up down in Marine Corps Recruit Depot, San Diego. And I went through boot camp scared. I was homesick and lonely and afraid. And everybody was older than me in my platoon. They were all 19, 20 year old. And, I was 17, and so I put a facade out there. I acted like what I thought a man should act like, and I got through boot camp. I struggled and got through, and then I was at Camp Pendleton, and I was in the infantry, and we did that Cuban crisis thing in 1962, and then went back through the Panama Canal and went over to Okinawa for 13 months, and first night there we got unpacked, and the guys come up and said, "Hey, Frank, we're going to go get drunk. You want to go with us?" And that made me feel a part of those guys. And I said, yeah, let's go. And so we went out in the Ville to get drunk. And we didn't go out to have one or two beers and then come back and write Mom and Dad letters or have a highball and come back and polish my shoes. We went out to get drunk with the men. And these guys bought a Typhoon Fifth of sake. It holds about 2 gallons, cost 75 cents. They started passing that bottle of sake around, and they're chug-a-lugging it, and they're slapping each other on the back. They're doing that male bonding thing. And that sake got to me, and I chug-a-lugged 4 or 5 big mouthfuls of it. And I don't know how you drank sake at the age of 17. I sprayed that shit all over their shoes, and they're laughing and pointing at me, and I got tears coming out my eyes. I got snot and sake running out my nose. And, you know, they're laughing at me, and I feel like a wimp and a wussy, and I hate that feeling. And so the bottle comes around, and I chug-a-lugged some more of it, and I puked it back up. And, you know, I realized something at that point. I realized that if you're going to be an alcoholic, you can't let looking bad bother you. You got to hang in. You just got to hang in. And, you know, we hung in. Well, I kept drinking that sake down. I kept holding a little bit at a time. And finally, I held enough sake down and something funny happened. I don't know what alcohol did for you, but this is what alcohol did for me. I looked at those 5 or 6 guys I was drinking with and I realized something. These guys are punks. Why am I hanging out with these sissies? I went out drinking on my own. And I'm in another bar and I'm drinking and shooting pool with another Marine. And he said something evidently I took offense to, and I hit him in the mouth with a pool cue. And you know, in the movies, it looked cool. And he's laying there bleeding, and I can look around and see some of his have been in prison. So you guys know that feeling you get when they call the police on you? And you get scared, and you got that anxiety, and you got to get the hell out of there because they're going to come and lock you up? That's the feelings I got. And so I split from the bar, and I run down through the alleys in Anoko, and I went in another bar, and I'm sitting in there, and I start drinking shooters and chasing it with beer, and something funny happens. That fear goes away, and that anxiety goes away. It just dissolves it. And so I start bragging to the guy next to me about the guy hitting him out of the pool cue. I become bulletproof and invisible when I drink. I am not afraid of anything. And then I look down at the end of the bar, and there's a Nason sitting down there, and she slides up next to me and asks me to buy her a drink, and I'm a sucker for a pretty face. You know, the women have been able to take me for everything I've got all my life. And don't turn on me. Jesus. What are you going to do when you find out I die? Well, that cheered you up, didn't it? Just, I'm going to tell you what. I thought maybe coming up here this time that they would have settled down and started working the steps. They're not doing that. They will turn on a stranger in a minute. That's, I swear to God. You're going to have to send me a men's letter. When you get to step 10, you're going to have to write me. In there. But she slides up next to me and she asks me to buy her a drink. And being a nice guy, I buy her a drink. And then she tells me about her sick mom that needs surgery. And, you know, it just broke my heart. And so I gave her some more money, and her and I trudged the road of happy destiny to her hooch. And I'd like to stand up here tonight and tell you that we had such a great time, she probably still remembers it to this day. Oh, don't laugh. She does. Okay. I got to tell you this, though. It was over too quick for me to remember it. And, but as a courtesy, she went to clean up. And when she did, that hurt my little macho ego attitude. And so I stole my money back and set her house on fire. So I told you she remembered it. And I went back to the base and passed out. And at reveille the next morning, I come to and I'm in the head throwing up. And everything I had eaten, drink that night, I'm puking, and I got a terrible hangover, and my head's throbbing, my stomach's upset, and I cannot remember anything that had happened the night before. And the guy started telling me the MPs are looking for who had hit that guy with a pool cue. And what happened is that fear came back. And I got scared again, and I know I'm in trouble, and I'm going to the brig. And then they told me about the fire in the Ville that night, and I was ashamed of that. You see, my father hadn't raised me to treat women that way and to act that way, and I was embarrassed and ashamed of that. And I didn't know how in the hell that could have happened. And I knew I was definitely in trouble that night, and I felt all those feelings you feel when you're with the guilt and the shame and everything. And I found out a secret that morning in Okinawa, though. I opened up my locker, and there's a bottle in it with a big red dot on it, and that's called Akadama wine. And I took that wine down that morning and screwed the cap on it, and I chug-a-lugged some of that wine and went out to formation and come back, and by the time that had elapsed, something funny happened. My headache went away, my stomach settled down, I didn't have a hangover no more. Now, I don't know what that tells you, but that tells me if I drink in the morning, I don't have to be sick. I don't have to have that excruciating headache and the upset stomach and puking everything up. And so I got that bottle of wine out of that locker, and I drank some more of the wine that morning. And then something else happened. I started to brag about hitting that guy with a pool cue. I started to brag about setting that woman's house on fire. I thought I was pretty slick. You see, alcohol worked for me. Alcohol allowed me to go out and act and do anything I wanted to do and not pick an emotional tab up for it in the morning. I didn't feel any guilt or any shame when I drank. And I didn't care whose life I walked through when I drank. And I didn't know that until I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. I became a morning drinker and a daily drinker at the age of 17. All my money went on booze and the women in the bars, and I thought that's what macho guys did. And I started getting a lot of trouble. You know, I'd go out in the bars and fight or whatever would happen, and I'd get in trouble, and I'd make a stripe, and they'd take it away from me. And I'd make another stripe, and they'd take that away from me. And then they'd restrict me to my base, and then they'd restrict me to the barracks. And if somebody came up to me and said, "Hey, Frank, you know, every time you drink, you get in trouble. Alcohol seems to be a problem," I could have given them reasons why that's not true. I don't know about you, but it was never my fault. You see, I could rationalize and justify all my actions. It was never alcohol or me. It was always them. You see, if that guy in the bar hadn't said what he said, I wouldn't have hit him with an ashtray. I'm not a fool. And if that woman hadn't ordered tea when she told me it was whiskey, I wouldn't have threw the shot glass through the mirror. I'm not dumb. And if the duty NCO hadn't told me to shut up, I wouldn't have popped him in the mouth. So it's not my fault, it's their fault. If he hadn't have said that, if she hadn't have done this, if the wife and kids hadn't have done this, if the police hadn't have done this, if the boss hadn't acted that way, I could give reasons and justifications for all my actions till I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. And the old-timer snapped me up and said, "If you want to see what the problem is, go look in the mirror. The 12 steps are written for you to work, not your neighbors. The 12 steps are written for you to work, not your wife and kids. The 12 steps are written for you to work, not your boss, not the people on the highways or anything else." And I found out in Alcoholics Anonymous, I had to change me. I didn't know that. I didn't have a clue. One day in Okinawa, I ran out of money to drink on, and I decided to rob a cab driver. They're always overcharging us. I knew the meters were fixed, and they were ripping us off. And this guy fought back, and I held his head down to the pavement and picked up a rock the size of a softball, and I beat his face in with it. And I was in a lot of trouble. And my father flew over to Okinawa, and I was put in a brig, and then Dad came over, and he met with the general, and he brought letters, and he paid for that man's plastic surgery, and he paid for his retirement and did all those things. And all I did is beg the Marine Corps not to throw me out. It's the only thing I knew how to do. And I was 18 year old, and I was looking at a long time in a federal penitentiary for my actions. And if you'd have told me that it was behind alcohol, I could have given you reasons that's not true. I did believe in my mind till I got to Alcoholics Anonymous and did that inventory that they were ripping us off, and I found out I was just going to rob him to get money to drink on. And by the time that paperwork went through to get me released from that brig after my court-martial, I had spent almost a year locked up. And they sent me to Camp Lejeune, North Carolina, and on the way there I went through Illinois, and I met a girl out of high school, and I married her and took her to North Carolina with me, and she wants me to stay home and be a husband. Now, I don't know about you, but I'm a bar drinker now. I love the bars. I love the intelligent guys and the beautiful women. A good bar is one you can smell at the front door. I love those bars. And put on the country music. And what I would do, I don't know about you, I got a wife that wants me to stay at home. And so what I would do is I would go start a fight with her. And then we'd have that cuss fight that alcoholics have. And I got a vulgar, obscene mouth. And her and I'd be arguing and fighting. And she'd be yelling and screaming. And that would give me the excuse to leave that house and go drink, because I can't drink in a noisy place. And so it's back out in those bars. And, you know, I'm out there and some guy will say something, and I'll hit him in the head with a bottle of beer or something. I'll call the Jacksonville police, and I'll go to another bar, and I'm sitting in there drinking. And then I'll lock eyes with some honey in that bar, and I need to be validated. I don't feel like a man, and I need somebody to validate me. And self-obsessed, and I pick up some woman, and we go to her place and do what we got to do to validate me. And And I'm laying there sobering up, and I start to think, and that's a bad deal. You shouldn't drink and think. That's should never do that. And I started to think about that wife at home, and what I realize when I'm sobering up is it's not her fault, it's my fault. You see, when you're a liar and a cheat, that's what you feel like. When you're unfaithful, that's what you feel like. And so I felt those feelings you feel when you're all those things. And I can't go home and look at her in the eye now because I know what and who I am. And so I leave and go to a bar and I get a couple of shooters and a beer. What it does is make me feel macho, and that's what macho guys do. And I feel like a man and I can go home now. And I walk in and she says, "Where have you been?" Now I hate that question. You know, now I got to lie to her. I wouldn't lie if she didn't ask that question, so it's her fault I'm a liar. I mean, it makes sense to me. And then we'd have that cuss fight again, arguing and fighting, and I'm back out in those bars. And I come into Alcoholics Anonymous, and what I found out is I'm too immature to be a husband. I didn't know that. All my life, my intentions have been to be like my father. My father's a good man. He was married to my mom for 50 years. He didn't act or treat my mom the way I was doing. And you guys told me I was too immature to be a husband and that my wife is none of my business. You told me that what she wears, how she dresses, what she cooks for dinner, how she cleans that house, it ain't up to me to tell her what to do. I'm to shut up and take care of me. You told me those 12 steps are for me to work. And you told me to leave her alone and quit judging her and quit taking her inventory, and I had to learn to do that here. You guys taught me here how to do that because I had no clue. Then we had a kid, and I don't know about you, but kids, they make messes. They spill shit, they break things, they're knocking stuff over. What's up with that? I hate that. I like a house that looks like nobody lives in it. I like everything shined and buffed and polished and pressed and clean, and this kid is ruining the house. And I get crazy and the kid cries. I don't want the kid crying. I want it quiet, and I'd shake her and I'd throw her in her crib, and then that guilt and that shame would come over me when you're a bad father and you're an abusive father. And I felt a lot of guilt and shame over that. And the only thing that would take that guilt and that shame away is a couple of shots of whiskey. And then it just justified in my mind that my actions were right. She's got to learn discipline. She's got to do this and that. And alcohol made it okay. And I come into Alcoholics Anonymous and I found out I'm too immature to be a father. I didn't know that. I wanted to be a father like my dad was to me and my two brothers. I hated that. And I carried a lot of guilt and shame into sobriety about how I treated my children. And you guys told me kids are little people. And when they grow up, that's how they learn. They touch things and knock them over and spill things and need to get coordinated, and what I needed to do is learn patience and tolerance. And I had to learn that here in Alcoholics Anonymous. Then I got called into the CO's office one day, and they issued me a rifle with a telescope on it and live ammunition and sent me across the ocean to a place called Vietnam. And I was a sniper over there in 67, 68 up at Khe Sanh, and I got to tell you right off the jump, Vietnam is not my problem. I get tired of hearing guys whine about that crap at the podium. I've been to a lot of meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous in over 19 years. But I got to tell you this. I have never seen an NVA soldier walk in the door of an AA meeting, take a Vietnam vet out at gunpoint, and make him drink. I may see that someday, but I haven't seen it yet. And I'm going to tell you what my problem was in Vietnam. I was afraid. I was afraid, and I couldn't tell anybody about that fear. How does a macho guy tell somebody they're afraid in war? I'm a Marine, for Christ's sakes. I'm not supposed to be afraid. And I was terrified. And I couldn't tell anybody about that fear. I looked at the other guys I was with up at Khe Sanh and Kantian, and they didn't look afraid. And I was, and I was ashamed of that. And then the other thing, the things I seen happen in war made me sick at my stomach, and macho guys don't get sick. I seen sands of Iwo Jima. Macho guys don't get sick, except I did. And I was ashamed of that. And I found out a secret in Vietnam. 151 proof rum in my canteens, I'm bulletproof and invisible. And now I can go out and do the things I got to do. I was a sniper. I worked with Bravo Recon up there on the DMZ. And I can go do what I got to do to show all you guys how tough I am. And I did a lot of bad things to a lot of people. And I'm not proud of those things I did. But what had happened is we'd come back in our harbor site and I'd break out my canteen and I'd drink some of that 151 rum that I had in there, and it'd take away that guilt and that shame. It'd take away that fear, and it'd allow me to feel like I was macho again. And what alcohol did for me in Vietnam was save my sanity. Alcohol saved my sanity. And like I say, I did a lot of bad things to a lot of people over there trying to show everybody how tough I was. And what I learned in Alcoholics Anonymous when I got here is that all I've got in sobriety is right now. And if I can put enough nows together, I'm going to have it tonight. I can't put enough nows together to go back and change my past. I can't undo any of the bad things I've done. And what I got to do is not close the door on that. I need to remember what I used to be like and try not to repeat the actions I used to do. And I've learned that in Alcoholics Anonymous. And in March of 1968, during the siege of Quezon, I got wounded over there. I got blown up. And I come back to the States, and I got out of the hospital. I went home, and there's my wife, and she had a son born to us while I was over there. He's crying on the couch, and he wants my attention, and I'm drinking, and my wife wants me to stay home, and I want to get out in those bars and drink and talk about the war. Because, you know, that's all us macho guys got. We, you know, we got to carry that shit with us forever. And so I want to get out there and rap about it, you know. I got to be tough and tell everybody how cool I was over there. So we're having that cuss fight again, and we're arguing and fighting and yelling and screaming. My daughter's crying. My son's crying. A lot of chaos in that house. And I finally told her to shut up or I'd kill her. And that woman didn't believe me. And when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I didn't believe in God. I had done too many bad things to too many people. And you guys told me there's always been a higher power in my life. And when I look back over the things I've done in my life, I can see that that's true today. But back then, I didn't believe that. So I went in the closet and I got a gun out. And I walked back in that kitchen and I told her, shut up or I'll kill you. And that woman did not shut up. And I'm trying to get the safety off that gun. My daughter's between my legs. She's pulling on my pants, telling me don't shoot her, mommy. And I'm trying to get the safety off. And I hit a pin at the base of the receiver. And that was a firing pin. And I pushed it back in and that gun went off. And the bullet went through my hand and it went down between my legs where my daughter was standing. And the bullet didn't hit her. You see, I'm a blessed man for that. I could have accidentally shot my daughter in a drunken stupor that day. And I'm just very blessed for that. And shortly after that, my wife divorced me. I couldn't believe it. I mean, I shot myself, for Christ's sakes, and she split. And she took the kids, you know. And I drank over that for a long time. I don't know about you, but that gave me a good excuse to drink. And I went down to San Diego. I was a drill instructor down there at Marine Corps Recruit Depot, and I stole from the recruits and I abused them because I thought that's what macho guys do and that's a great way to train them and I'm not proud of those actions. And I was drinking in the bars and still fighting and getting crazier than hell. And after 2.5 years there, I made another keen alcoholic decision. I volunteered and went back to Vietnam for a second tour in 1970. And I was with the infantry this time and all I did is repeat my bad actions from the first time. Alcohol saved my sanity again, and I did a lot of bad things to a lot of people over there, and, you know, I'm not proud of that. And, you know, I got to tell you, you hear a lot of speakers in Alcoholics Anonymous, and they get up here, and they get a little time and stuff, and they're wonderful. And they're just walking hand in hand with God, and they're beautiful, for Christ's sake. They're just beautiful people, and they never do anything wrong, and life is just perfect. And they had a perfect drunkalogue, and now they're little perfect people in sobriety, and... And I got to tell you that I'm not like that. I got to tell you that I'm a human being. And I have the same emotions and feelings that I had when I got here. But what I try not to do today is to act on everything that I think or every emotion or feeling that I get, I try not to act on it. And I got to tell you up front, because I don't want to come back and make amends to you next week. And I'm not a good man today. And I'm not a good father or a good husband. I know what I am. I'm a good member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I love this program of Alcoholics Anonymous. There's nothing I wouldn't do to help a newcomer or anybody in Alcoholics Anonymous. I keep my commitments and I attend 7 meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous a week because if I ain't speaking, I go to 5 regular meetings. I got commitments to those meetings and I love Alcoholics Anonymous. And I can tell you this also, that I'm a better husband and father and man today than I was 19 years ago. And hopefully tomorrow I'm going to be a little bit better than I was today. But I'm a human being and I make a lot of mistakes and I make a lot of amends to a lot of people. I know that you can't tell that I'm still intense and stuff, but I am. You know, I can get it on. But Alcoholics Anonymous and these 12 steps allow me to live out there in that world that I have a hard time living in. Allows me to be comfortable most of the time. You know, I got wounded again over there, and I come back to the States again. And after 11 years active duty, the Marine Corps wants me to come back after lunch, and I can't do that. I got to drink now to keep the demons away. And so after 11 years active duty, I got out of the Marine Corps. I took my honorable discharge and I got out. And I did what macho guys were doing back then. I put on a gun and a badge and I became a police officer. And freeze! God, I love saying that. That makes me hot. The guy in the back held his hands up. Put them on the wall, crazy. Don't move. Spread them. I love that. I like saying that at meetings because newcomers, when I yell freeze, their eyes go thwang! Man, immediately, before the sponsor even tells me, do a little mini inventory. You know, do I have a current driver's license? Do I have car insurance? Do I have any warrants? You know, and if you think that's bad, you know, That's just one of the benefits of staying sober is you can harass newcomers. You know, if stay sober and harass them, you'll see how it feels. It's great. They walk out of meetings and stuff. I love that. It makes me feel good. But I became a police officer in Southern California, and I can't tell my partner in the police car I'm afraid of the dark. Can't tell my partner there's demons in that alley when we go down there. If I describe those demons, he's going to think I'm crazy. He knows I'm a Marine. He knows I'm a Vietnam vet. I ain't afraid of anything except I'm afraid of everything. And so before I go to work, what I do is I drink. And what drinking does is take that fear away. And now I can go out on the street and do what I got to do to show everybody how tough I am. Now something else happens. When you scare me now, I get violent. And I was a violent police officer. I'm not proud of that. Alcoholics Anonymous allows me the opportunity to go into Wayside and Chino and these places and make amends when I speak in there and I tell those guys what kind of person I was. And I also tell them that I'm trying not to live that way today and I'm trying not to treat people the way I used to treat them. And I also tell them I'm not always successful at that because I got to be honest with them. I'm a human being and there's some days I have bad days. But at least I get the opportunity to go in there and make amends. At least today I get the opportunity to try not to treat people the way I used to treat them. Now I got married again and we had a daughter. And then my wife got pregnant. And then I got to still be validated. I don't feel like a man. I don't feel macho. I got to do what macho guys do. So I started to have an affair with my partner. Now my partner's a female by now. Time has passed. Wife had a kid, pregnant again, female partner. And my female partner found out my wife was pregnant. She shot me. And that's not even funny. You've got to talk to your sponsor after this meeting. That is a sick alcoholic woman right there. She shot me in the head. She could have killed me. And I thought that I don't have to worry about where I part my hair when I get out of the shower. The wet hair just falls over the scar. It's cool. But I thought rather than get gunned down in a police car, I'd resign, and so I did. And I got a real estate license. And I made a lot of money in real estate. And it was 1978, and I got to tell you that if you think money, property, and prestige will fix it, if you're an alcoholic of my type, money doesn't fix anger. Money doesn't fix rage. Money doesn't fix guilt. Money doesn't fix desperation. Money doesn't fix anxiety. Money doesn't fix inadequacies. And all money did is allow me to buy two brand new Cadillacs and pay cash for them. One for my wife and one for me. And we bought a house on a quarter acre and we put a swimming pool in and a three-hole putting green. And my kids wore designer clothes. And I used to wear gold chains with medallions and diamond pinky rings and shit. I had a Mr. T starter kit before he was ever on television. I gave him the idea. And I got to tell you, money didn't fix it. Money did not take those feelings or the anger or the child abuse and the spousal abuse and the fighting in the bars and the stealing and the lying and the cheating. It didn't fix those things. And at the age of 36, I looked around and what I'd worked for all my life to get was gone. The wife and kids had left me. The house was gone. The two Cadillacs, the clothes, the jewelry, all the money was gone. And everything I owned was in a cardboard box in the back seat of a stolen car. And that's a hell of a note for a former police officer. And I ended up homeless. I ended up on the street. I ended up vomiting and puking and peeing blood. I was very sick. And if you'd have told me that alcohol took me to that point, I could have given you reasons that ain't true. This is the only disease in the world that's killing you. And your head says this ain't the problem. It's something else. It's always something else. I find I will not admit I'm an alcoholic. That's a bad deal. Alcohol's not my problem. If I had a little more money, if I could just get a house and get started again, if I had a younger wife, if I had a better car, I could come up with all those things, but it wasn't alcohol. And at the age of 36, I'm living on the streets, I'm dying on the streets, and a woman I had worked real estate with seen me one day, and she took me in and she took me to a doctor, and that doctor gave me a physical, and he called me in his office when he got the results, and he said, Mr. Jones, he said, I got to tell you, he said, you're addicted to alcohol the way a heroin addict is to heroin. You're an alcoholic. You're dying. He says, you got a hole in your throat. You're hemorrhaging internally. You got cirrhosis of the liver. All the things and diseases you get when you're living and acting and treating yourself the way I was doing it. And he said, if you don't stop drinking right now, you'll die before summer. And when that man told me that, you know what I felt? Relief. Because I was tired. I used to take my gun and cock it and put it in my mouth and I couldn't pull the trigger. And when he told me I was going to die if I kept drinking, I shook his hand. I left his office and I went straight to a liquor store and bought a fifth of whiskey and a case of beer. Because if alcohol was going to kill me, I wanted to die. And to make a long story short, my parents found out that I was on the streets dying and wouldn't take care of myself, and they had me committed. I couldn't believe that. I hadn't done nothing to them. I hadn't even spoke to them for over 4 years. And they had me strapped down in a bed in Indiana, and I could not believe that. And they cleared up my physical ailments, and they shot me full of vitamin B and magnesium, and I went through some terrible DTs, and I have very little recollection of those times. And at about 11 days, they unstrapped me from that bed, and what they did is they made me go to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that meeting in Maywood, Indiana, when I walked in, there was a bunch of losers in there just like you. I could not believe my eyes. And I know nobody in here judges. But I got to tell you, when I walked into that meeting, I judged you. Because you see, what I seen is the same thing I seen tonight. People talking and hugging and shaking hands, and your hair's clean and your clothes are clean, and you got the smiles and you're bright and things are going good. And I knew you could not have been where I had been. You didn't end up on the streets. You didn't abuse two wives and four kids. You didn't do in Vietnam what I had done, and I could tell by looking at you. And you know what you guys told me? Get your coffee, shut up, and sit down. I couldn't believe you were talking to me that way. I'm a killer, for Christ's sakes. And you told me to go to 90 meetings in 90 days. You said, if you want to take a drink, Frank, go to AA. That's what I heard you tell me. I don't know if that's what you told me, but that's what I heard you say. Go to Alcoholics Anonymous. If you want to take a drink, go to AA. And then you wanted me to hold your hand during the Lord's Prayer. Fat chance. I am not holding your hands at all. And I'd leave there and I'd come back the next night and I'd look at you and I hated you even more because you wasn't as hip as me. You see, you hadn't made the money I had made. You wasn't as hip as me, as slick as me, as cool as me, or as macho as me. You didn't have the money I had. You wasn't big like I was. You didn't have anything like I had it, I could tell. And you know what you told me? You know what, Frank? You ain't got none of that shit now. Get your coffee, shut up, and sit down. If you want to drink, go to AA. And I got to tell you that if you're an alcoholic of my type, what happened to me might happen to you if you don't plug into this thing called Alcoholics Anonymous. If you don't put this thing called AA first in your life. If you don't get yourself a sponsor, somebody that'll kick your butt on down the road. Go to these meetings. Have respect for Alcoholics Anonymous. Sit in here and pay attention and get commitment so the meeting's yours. What happened to me might happen to you, but I don't know what kind of alcoholics you are. Maybe you're not like me. Maybe you can go to one meeting a week. Maybe you can just come to this meeting and take your chinchy birthday cake. Maybe your life is great when you quit drinking. What happened to me was this. I walked out of that hospital and I stood out there in the sun in Indiana and I started crying. And all the things I had done all my life came down and started sitting on my chest. Because I'm as sober as I am tonight. And all the things I did in Vietnam and all the things I did to those wives and kids. Shoplifting when I was a kid. The disrespect to the parents. Came down and started choking me out. And I thought I was having a heart attack. And I didn't want to take a drink of alcohol. I wanted to commit suicide. Where do you go when you quit drinking and you want to take your own life? You see, you never told me about that. You didn't tell me that when I got sober, my life had run out my sleeve. And the only thought I'd ever have is I needed to kill myself because I can't stand the pressure. I got no job, no money, no car, no place to live. I got no start. I got no friends. I got nobody around me. Where in the hell do you go from there? You see, you didn't tell me about that. So what happened to me might happen to you if you don't plug into this deal called Alcoholics Anonymous. If you don't get yourself a friend in here and a sponsor, start developing the fellowship and go to these meetings and work these steps, what happened to me might happen to you. I came back to California, found my wife and kids up in Oregon, living in a trailer with their mom and dad and her mom and dad, and I brought them back down to Newhall, California, and we moved into a vacant garage in the middle of a 6-acre vacant field. We slept on the floor of that garage. We ate out of a styrofoam chest and we put water on our cereal. And I didn't go to meetings. I am too macho for AA. I am tougher than you, better than you, slicker than you, and I'm going to be fine and I don't need you losers. And my wife and kids said I got a lot angrier than I ever was when I was drinking. And at 6 months without a drink of alcohol and no AA, I got no meetings, no sponsor, no steps, no higher power. I'm driving on the freeway in Southern California in a stolen car. And I'm behind this guy in the fast lane, and I honked at him and told him to move out of the way. And he don't move out of the way. Now, maybe up here in San Jose, you're so serene and wonderful without meetings and not drinking that you just pull around him and wave and go on about your business. You're a little Mr. and Mrs. Sunshine. Well, that's not me. And he didn't get out of the way, and he's got to pay. And so I rear-ended him. And then when he goes off the freeway on the off-ramp, I went with him. And when he stopped his car, I stopped mine. And I had a 45. And I walked up to that man's car, and I put that gun in the window, and I said, "You ever drive that slow again, I'll kill you." I didn't want a bourbon and water. I wanted to take that man's life. Where do you go when you get that desperate? When you get that anxiety ridden and that crazy because the pressure of life's on you and you want to control everything around you and nothing's going right. Where do you go? What do you do? And at 10 months, I haven't had a drink of alcohol in 10 months. I haven't been to any meetings. I'm standing in Alpha Beta. It was a grocery store there in Newhall up on Lyons Avenue, and I'm buying me Pepsi and cigarettes. Do you think I would buy my children milk for their cereal? I don't know about you, but I'm a taker. I'm selfish, I'm self-centered, and I want mine and to hell with everybody around me because it's me, I am the mighty I am. Maybe you were just a little giver of charity when you were out there. Well, I'm not, and I'm not sober either. And I'm getting mine, and it says 10 items or less, cash only. And I'm standing in line, and my committee's back. They're in full bloom now. And my head said, "Count that lady's items." Ten items or less, cash only, and she's got 13 items in a 10-item line. Maybe here in San Jose, you let the little woman go on through the line. Well, my head kicks in, and my head says, "You better take a closer look at the items." And I start looking. Is 12 eggs 12 items, or is that a dozen eggs? If she's got four apples in a bag, is that apples or four items? 2 half gallons of milk. Milk or two more goddamn items? And then I'm angry now. Now I'm angry. And I don't know about you, but when I get angry, my head says, "You know, you can't be this way. You need to settle down." I can't settle down when I get angry. I got to do something with the anger. I can't just back that off. And I am standing there ready to launch. And she broke her checkbook out. And I said, "You can't write a check in this line. You got to... it says cash, lady." And she turned and she says, "I'll be through in a minute, Sonny." I said, "I've never been a damn Sonny." I said, "I'm not Sonny right now. You're not writing a check. And when I get angry, I got to do something." And I said, "You can't write a check." And I took eggs and milk. I hurled that shit all over Alpha Beta. I did not want a pina colada. I didn't want a margarita hold the salt. I wanted to rip her blue wig off. I hated that old broad. That's how I get when I don't drink and I don't go to meetings. When I don't have a sponsor, I don't have somebody to guide me down this path of sobriety. I'm 13 months without a drink of alcohol and I ain't been to any meetings. I'm standing in this real estate office. This guy walks by and says, "Frank, how you doing?" I said, "That's a personal question. Why are you trying to pry into my private life?" I said, "I'll tell you how I'm doing, but I don't want anybody else to hear." And I grabbed him by the throat, jerked him on a desk, and I started choking him, saying, "How in the hell do you think I feel?" No Bud Light at that point in time. I wanted to rip his throat out. I had a nervous breakdown. I flipped out. That's probably the most comfortable time in my sobriety. I didn't have any worries about anything. I didn't even know where I was. I think that's serenity now that I think about it. And I got to tell you how God works in my life when I don't believe in God. There was an active member of Alcoholics Anonymous in that office that day, and the only time he had been in there. And they pried my fingers off this guy's throat, and they laid a card down, and he says, "I know what's wrong with you," but he said, "I can't help you." He said, "You need to go see this man." And I just cried, and he took me back to the garage, and They sat with me for about 10 days, and I just cried, and I have no recollection of those days at all. And they took me down to this man's office in 10 or 11 days, and I sat in his office, and I cried. And I had taken life as far as I could take it because suicide was the only answer. And I sat in that man's office, and he explained to me that day what saved my life and sanity up to and including tonight. Because this is what he said to me. He said, "Frank, you haven't had a drink in over a year." He said, "Right this minute," he said, "drinking is not your problem." He said, "What your problem is this minute is a living problem." And he says, "You need to find a living answer to your living problem." And he says, "You'll find that in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous." He said, "If you go to those meetings, there's a group of people that's already walked down that path before you got there. You need to fall in behind them and do the things they're doing." And he says, "If you do that, you'll never have to feel this way again. You'll never have to want to commit suicide, homicide, go to jail, nut houses, or die." He says, "You need to get a higher power." And I told him, "I don't believe in God." He said, "Whoever puts the moon out and takes it down in the morning, pray to them." And I understand that. He told me to come to these meetings and sit in the front. He told me to listen. He told me to pay attention, not to how they drank or what they drank, but the feelings they had and what they're doing today to make themselves feel better. He told me to listen to chapter 5 when it was read in those 12 traditions. He told me Alcoholics Anonymous should be the most important thing in my life. He told me it should come before my wife, my kids, the job, my car, or anything else. Because he said, "If you don't put AA first, you're not going to have those things anyway. You're going to drink them up or chase them away with your violence." And I started coming to the meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I had to shake hands with you to get my sick mind off my sick self. I had to get commitments at the meeting so I would show up. And he told me that there was a commitment, and it was mine, and I should be there every night unless there's a death in the family, and it was my death. I understand that kind of talk. And so I plugged into Alcoholics Anonymous. And I came in here and I started watching you people. And I don't know how any of you act at home. But what I try to do from these meetings is I try to act at home the way you treat each other here. I try to act out on the freeways the way you guys treat each other in here. I try to take Alcoholics Anonymous out there with me. Because that's where I have a problem living. I don't have a problem living in here with you. I got a problem out there in a world that sucks. And they don't care that I'm an alcoholic and that I get angry. And so I got to live out there. And I had to learn how to treat my children here because I didn't know how to treat kids. I came to the meetings and when my home group, when they brought their kids, I used to watch them. And what you guys told me to do was go home and tell your wife and kids you love them. And I said, "Yeah, but I don't. And if I tell them that, I'll be lying." And they said, "You've lied to them for 10 years. Go lie to them some more." And so I went home and told my wife and kids I loved them. And I didn't love them. I didn't know who they were when I sobered up. They were strangers to me like I was to them. But I went home and told them I loved them, and I didn't. And day after day and week after week, I did that. And one day I went home and told them I loved them. And something funny happened. I loved them. I don't even know what meetings they were going to. They changed. And what I learned from that lesson is this. I learned that it doesn't matter how I feel about it. I just got to go do it. I just have to follow direction from the old-timers in these meetings. I've never been told to do something, and I went and done it, and it hurt me. I have never been hurt by any direction I've been given in Alcoholics Anonymous. The only thing I have done is benefited from it. Everything I've done in AA, sponsor direction, old-timer direction, has benefited me. It's made me feel better. It's allowed me to clean up my side of the street, and it's allowed me to stay in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I had to learn that. I had to learn how to treat my kids. I don't know how to treat kids. Their rooms are messy. I got daughters, for Christ's sake. I got three daughters and a son. And why do women need 8 towels to dry their damn hair after a shower? And my kids are in high school and grade school, and I walk in and there's 6 or 7 wet towels on the floor. And their bed clothes are pulled on the floor because that's where they sleep. Why don't they sleep in the damn water bed I bought them? Why are their hair curlers and curling irons and shit hung on the drawer and bras and panties and posters and shit all over everything? And it used to make me crazy. And finally I went to my sponsor and I said, "It's making me crazy. They don't know how to clean their room or do anything." And he said, "Whose room is it?" I said, "It's theirs." He said, "Then shut the door and quit looking in there." I had to learn how to be a dad. I had to let my kids grow up. I had to let them learn and be individuals and be little people. It's not up to me to tell people what to do or be their boss, director, or anything else. And as a result of doing these things and learning how to treat my kids and that there, I have a relationship with them. My oldest daughter, who I almost shot that day in Oceanside, California, is an attorney in Indiana for a medical corporation. She did that in spite of her father, not because of me. She did it in spite of me. And she had a little boy 4 years ago, and she named that little boy after me. That's Alcoholics Anonymous. That's not because I'm a good dad. I'm not a good dad. And my middle daughter, she's teaching fifth grade in Saugus in Newhall area. She's getting her master's degree. And she did that in spite of me, not because of me. I was of no help to her in my rage. My youngest daughter's down in San Diego. She's a junior in college. She wants to be a veterinarian. I don't give a shit for little furry animals. And she just says, "Oh, Dad, stop it. You do too." And, you know, my kids love me today. And, you know, when we get sober, we think it's all going to be beautiful and wonderful. And it's not. Because life goes on outside these rooms. I got a son. And he spent 13 out of 16 years in state prison. And he's a violent, angry alcoholic. I don't know where in the hell he got it from. It beats me. And what I've learned from you people is that he's my son and I need to love him in spite of what or who he is. And that he'll get to Alcoholics Anonymous in his God's time, not my God's time. And I just need to love my son. And that's what you taught me to do. I'm not proud of him. I don't communicate with him when he's in there. I didn't help put him in there. And I had to learn to do that here. And I try to help him when he gets out. He knows I'm in AA, so I got to stay here so he sees it still works. And my dad died in sobriety. I was 9 years sober, and when they buried him, I put my 9-year medallion in his pocket. I love my father. I wanted to be like him. I'm the furthest thing from him that could happen. And what I've got out of Alcoholics Anonymous is, through hard times, it's always been here for me. I spent 2.5 years unemployed when I was 15 years sober. I lost everything in sobriety. Car, house, credit cards, good credit. I lost everything. I couldn't get a job. And all I did is kick it up to 7 meetings a week. All I did is shake hands with newcomers and try to be of service in AA. Not because I'm a good guy, because I was in goddamn pain. And I hate that pain. And the way to get rid of it is to come here and be with you. And to get your strength. See? And to take from you. And then when I come back to the next meeting, I need to give. And I learned that in Alcoholics Anonymous. And then 2.5, 3 years ago, I got into a profession I never wanted to get into, didn't care about, never thought about. And I can't file bankruptcy. My sponsor said, "You made the bills, you pay the damn bills." And so I got into a profession. I'm doing something now I never wanted to do or thought about doing, and I'm caught up on my bills. And I have a good life today. And it's because of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's not because of me. It's because I have surrendered to this program 100% because what I get back is far more than I ever put in. And if you're new or used, you don't have to remember anything I've said tonight. It's not important to anybody in here. It's only important to me. You see, this morning when I woke up in a clean bed with dry sheets. When I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I wasn't sleeping on sheets and my clothes weren't even dry. Before I came here to you tonight, I took a shower, I shaved, I got on clean clothes. When I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I wasn't wearing clean clothes and I wasn't taking showers or shaving. Tonight I sat down and had dinner with a bunch of good AAs from this group. We sat there and we talked, we acted like human beings. Well, most of us did anyway. Some of these damn goofs from up here don't know how to act, but I'm trying to give it to them. But we had a good time tonight, and I didn't puke that meal up with a lot of stomach bile behind it. And so what I'm telling you, if that's all I got out of Alcoholics Anonymous is what I got today, I'm overpaid. This is the only life in the world that I never dreamed I would ever have. And it's because of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's a commitment to a home group. It's a commitment to a sponsor. It's a commitment to the newcomers in the meetings I attend. It's never saying no to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous or an AA request. So if you're new or used, don't remember anything I've said tonight. Remember only one thing that's on the first line of chapter 5. And it was read to you tonight. And that says it all. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Thanks.